Welcome to another episode of Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. I am here with the beautiful Sierra, another fantastic ex-crew member that's gone on to do spectacular things, especially in the face of adversity. Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here, finally.
Finally. She says finally because we have tried to arrange this date a few times and we both stood each other up a few times as well. Not deliberately, but the planets have aligned and we are here today to hear your story. Obviously, I've known you for a little while now. You've been a remote part of Pearls of Wisdom for a little while. Because you're based in New York, the big city, Big Apple, so they call. But why don't we start at the beginning? So how or where did you get into the yachting industry?
Oh my goodness. I got into the yachting industry about 8 years ago now. And the reason I got into it is I was working in Banff, Alberta when I was in my early 20s. And during that time, I worked at a place called the Fairmont Banff Springs. And
I've been there.
Have you?
I have.
So you know exactly where I've worked. Do you remember the Rundle Lounge?
I went for a really nice dinner there. I don't know what it was, but it was like the fanciest dinner of my entire life. A boy took me there on a date. I was like 18 years old, all dressed up. I've got photos of it and everything. Oh wow, you worked there. That's an incredible hotel.
Yeah, so it was my first experience or introduction to high-end hospitality. And when I worked there, I was a lounge server at the Rundle Lounge, which is, if you've been to the hotel, for anyone who's listening, it's the restaurant that overlooks all of Banff. And so it's a really special place. And every year there, they used to do this thing called Celebrity Ski. And Celebrity Ski was run by this foundation called the Waterkeeper Foundation, where they would host a gala there and they'd have all these celebrities come in and they would ski and people would donate money and they would sell things for their charity. And while I was there, I was the lounge server to a family that owned a yacht. And at the end of my time, when they were leaving, they were saying, "Hey, you know, Sierra, do you know what yachting is?" And I said, "Yeah, like yachting, like Ontario, like the yachts there are not really yachts." And they said, "No, we're talking about yachting. These are the types of yachts in yachting." And they showed me their boat and they said, "We think you'd be really good in that type of industry. You should consider it." And so I ended up in yachting from just chance of meeting a yacht owner in the mountains.
That's mad. So they're like literally just, you know, picking up stews from a random hotel.
Yeah. They're like, "You know, Sierra, you're just so good at serving at the Rundle Lounge. We think you'd be really great serving on boats." And they were really right. It was a great industry for me to, you can do the hospitality side, you get to travel. Of course, people who are working in Banff, Alberta, they've got the travel bug. And so it was a really great opportunity to meet these people.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That's a good, like, anybody who's listening to this, Google the Banff Springs Hotel. Like, it is stunning. Like, it's set in this most beautiful environment. It's the same Lake Louise Hotel as well, is also spectacular. Yeah, I was lucky enough to get taken on a date there. So that's a good pickup story. Do you know? Like, yeah. My own is just, you know, hitting me up for this mega fancy hotel. So are you from Banff or like are you from a different part of Canada?
No, yeah. So I'm from a place called Hamilton, Ontario. It's like a few hour flight to Banff, and I moved there when I was 19 years old, and I wanted to do the mountain life and in the travel life, and I wanted to experience something different from where I grew up. So I left, and it was really magical. I loved living there. It was like a great introductory to like outdoor adventure, stuff that we didn't really have in Hamilton. We were climbing mountains all the time and kayaking all the time and biking, and it was a lot of fun, skiing, snowboarding.
Yeah. I mean, like, from Canadian, like, you obviously correct me if I'm wrong, in Canadian terms, Banff is so well placed because there's a lot of like ski hills really close together in Canadian terms. Like, there's quite a few. I don't know if it's expanded now, but there's actually quite a few together, you know, Sunshine and just so many beautiful spots.
Yeah, it's amazing there. I even had friends in yachting. They were getting married, and they said, you know, Sierra, where do you think you should do our honeymoon? And I said, let me tell you, you should definitely do it in Banff, Alberta. I'll tell you all the spots. You're going to start in Banff. You're going to go to Lake Louise. You're going to drive down the Icefold Parkway. You're going to end up in Jasper. And I mean, to this day, yachting has taken me to a lot of great spots in the world. But this spot is still my favorite. I don't feel like any place else compares to the Canadian Rocky Mountains.
No, I'd 100%. Like, driving from Calgary to go to Banff and seeing like these Rockies just appear on the horizon, and like when you get like, it's just, I remember having my lunch at the top of one of the runs on Sunshine. And looking out over the mountains, and I swear to God, it looked like waves breaking. It was just so many, like, and it's just so vast. Like, you literally have to upgrade your brain to take in that kind of spectacular view. So that's an incredible experience. So they convinced you. Did it not feel a bit weird? You're like, who are you? And you've just offered me a job.
Honestly, I was so young and adventurous and I was such a risk taker that I didn't feel it was weird at all. I felt like, yeah, you know what you're talking about. Like, surely you've known me for a week. You know what I should be doing. And I thought, like, great, this sounds like a good opportunity. And they also were saying, you know, you'll make really good money. They pay for all your stuff. And at that age, that's a huge bonus.
Yeah, like, they're going to pay for stuff.
They're going to pay for all my stuff. So they're going to pay for my rent, basically. And then I'm going to get fed for free. And then they're going to do all my toiletries. And, oh, by the way, you're going to go to all these crazy places. And it's going to be super fun and adventurous. You're going to make great people. And you're going to get to travel the world kind of for free. I mean, who says no to that in your 20s? Nobody.
Nobody.
Perfect. Put my name. Where do I sign my name?
I'll buy a ticket right now. So, right. Yeah. Okay. So you're in. Where did you go from there?
Yeah. So I went down to Florida and I studied at MPT. I took courses, and then I was staying at a place called the Chocolate Hostel. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before. Okay. So the Chocolate Hostel, I booked a place online, and it was advertised as a crew hostel that you'd stay in before you go to school. And I was like, perfect. I'm in Canada. It's cheap. It's cost effective. I'm going to book this place at the Chocolate Hostel. And I get there, and it ends up being not a hostel for crew, even though that's what it was advertised online. It was actually a hostel for like prostitutes, people that were like getting out of jail. There was fights all the time. It was the most crazy experience of my entire life. So I'm staying at this place. I'm going to school at MPT. They do have a room that I'm staying in that has bunk beds in it. And there's future stewardesses who are also taking courses that have, you know, got this from online, and they're coming and they're going every night. They're like, I'm calling my mom. I'm getting out of here. Like, I need a hotel. And I didn't have that luxury of being able to call anybody for help. So I was kind of just stuck there for a month waiting out until I got a job. And eventually I got hired on a boat. And when I was saying, I was supposed to like start, I think maybe in 2 weeks from the time that they hired me. And the chief stew was dropping me off from LMC to the Chocolate Hostel again, which had there were like fights all the time. There was cops there every day. It was a really not great experience. But anyway, she comes to drop me off at the chocolate hostel. And she said, is this where you're staying? And I go, yeah, like this is where I'm staying right now. And the chief steward, her name's Tina Fox. She was great. She goes, no, you're not. You're not staying here. I know I said that you're going to start in a couple weeks from now, but I'm going to go and talk to the captain. We're going to figure this out. And basically she came back the next day and she said, pack your bags. We're getting you the hell out of here. You don't need to start for 2 weeks, but you can stay on the boat for 2 weeks.
Were you laying in bed going, if I fall asleep, something might happen to me?
Yeah, no, what I ended up doing is there was like one random yacht engineer guy there, and I ended up making friends with him, and he kept saying like, don't worry, like I'll look out for you, like I'll watch your door. And he really did. Like if he, like anybody like was coming next to the door, he'd be like, hey, get away from that girl, she's here alone and I'm her bodyguard. But it was a really insane situation, and I was really happy that I got on board the boat. It was Pipe Dreams was my first yacht.
Pipe Dreams. That's quite metaphoric, isn't it? The name, like, yeah. Pipe Dream. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Like, when you're younger, you are willing to take chances like that. I mean, if my daughter said, like, I'd be probably catatonic. But when you're young, you're just like, oh, okay, well, you know.
Yeah. You're young, you feel so invincible. I think about this a lot now, about all the things that I did in my 20s that you couldn't pay me to do now. There's absolutely no way. I have a different type of fear in my life where if I ended up at the chocolate hostel, I would turn around and say, and it's so funny. So I was telling some friends about the chocolate hostel, and a lot of people on this side of the world have common stories about going there, but then exiting. And I'm saying, you know, I survived it. And my friends made me a t-shirt that said, I served the chocolate hostel. I think that's so great. So good.
It is quite mad, you know, taking those gambles, you know, that one of the dodgiest, the hostel wasn't dodgy, but I stayed in one in Toronto, but you had to go through like the crack district to get there. So getting to the hostel at nighttime was like the scariest thing I've ever done. Like in the day it was dodge, but like at nighttime, but once you were in the hostel, it was fine. But yeah, no. I had actually not as dodgy as the chocolate hostel, but I mean, yeah. You're young, take a gamble, take a chance, barricade yourself in your room, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I would just stay away like all day. I'd do my courses and then I would go to the beach or go wherever and come back at a certain time and get up at a certain time and get out of there. Double bolt the door, put a like a chair underneath the handle. Nobody's getting in.
So obviously you're at the chocolate hostel, like your first boat must have felt like a bloody miracle. You're like, yeah,
honestly,
I've got a job, I've been rescued.
It was really the best. I was rescued, I had clean sheets. I had food. I'm like, so you're telling me you're just going to cook for me now? I'm safe. And it was really great. It was at LMC and we did a yard period for a while and we were renovating the kitchen area or the galley. And it really did feel like a dream. it was great. I was making friends. Everybody was really friendly. The chief stew was amazing, and I don't know if at the time I appreciated how amazing she was, because you didn't really have anybody else to compare it to, but she was really great. She was a great like leader, a patient teacher, really great person to have as a junior stewardess. She took a lot of time to explain things, and she was quite positive, and it was a really, really good program.
So like what were your favorite bits, you know, your highlights from your time on board?
My highlights. I think I really got into, I met a captain on Turquoise, and his name is Ben Craig Cameron, and he was really into road cycling. And I used to think like, oh, road cycling, those people in those funny outfits and the helmets. And I liked biking. I was like a leisurely cyclist. And he really got me into road biking. And it kind of changed my entire life and my like mental health and the way that I saw the world. And I got really, really into it. So on that boat, I was allowed to have a bicycle and we'd be in really interesting places. And I'd cycle around and I felt that was really adventurous. And it was such a good experience that after that boat, when I left, I would put in my CV, no shit, like, I only want jobs that will allow me to have a bicycle. Like, that was my, I'm like, if you want to hire me, you need to allow me to bring my bicycle around. And it was really great. I ended up getting another job where I was based out of Italy. And I was cycling all up and down the coast from Imperia to Antibes and back. And it was so fun. And I feel like most people save a lot of money in order to do those experiences if you're into bike touring. And I had the opportunity to do it all over the place. And it was really great.
So you've worn Lycra all over the world.
So much Lycra. So much Lycra, colorful Lycra, dark Lycra. I am the Lycra queen. Yes.
I bet that helped with, you know, the pressures of being on board. Did you find that kind of helps you, like, obviously it is exercise, so that's good. But, you know, taking the time to get off and see things must help.
Yeah.
Dealing with the job.
For me, bicycling, of course, it's exercise, but it was more of a mental exercise. And it felt like my escape when I was on the boats, because it's not normal to be with people around the clock like we do in yachting. And I feel like you need to find some place to escape and to reset and relax your mind or think through or just have a moment to hear yourself think. And it's really hard in yachting to do that if you don't have that type of outlet. So for me, cycling was that little time to myself, like my escape, a place where I was able to deal with any kind of negative emotions that I was feeling or any challenges I can work through on a bicycle. So it was really great for me mentally.
Yeah, I've done it a few times. I was working on a boat and we were all getting into it. And then basically I refused to go back to work. I booked a holiday with my family and I refused to cancel it. They wanted me to do this trip and I said no. And they said, well, you know, bugger off then. So it's really a shame because we were just, but there's certain locations where I think even if you're not into it and you don't want to carry on too much, like Mallorca was, I was spoiled because that was really my first road cycling experience, and that place is just stunning and the roads are smooth and there isn't that much traffic. If you want to experience it, like, that island is geared up for that kind of experience.
I've never been. I didn't have the grand opportunity to get there. No, I wish I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah, I got spoiled. And then when we went with the boat to Barcelona, I was a bit of a wimp because I was like, it's so different, like the traffic. And, you know, I still did it, but like being in that kind of traffic, it's quite a different experience.
Yeah, I get that.
So you're on board, living your best life, getting paid loads of money. Did it change for you and you were kind of like, was there a moment where you're like, oh, maybe I don't want to do this anymore?
I feel like I felt that off and on throughout my career. It wasn't just like one ending moment where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And different boats brought different emotions for me. So the first boat I was talking about that was actually really amazing, and it had some amazing crew on it and the program was really interesting. I also felt very bullied by some of the crew members on there. And it was so different for me, because if you feel like you have conflict or you're bullied at a regular workplace, you leave at the end of the night and you're able to kind of reset that and you don't take it home with you. But when you have that and you don't leave, it's just there lingering, whether you're on or off on a boat, it becomes a real problem and it's really hard to manage. But that boat in particular, even though it started amazing and there was a lot of great memories from it, the ending of it felt so bad that when I left, I said, I'm never going back to yachting again. I was like, absolutely no, like 1 year, and I didn't want to do it because I said, I don't want to be trapped in a boat with people that are going to make me feel this way and I can't escape this. And conflict's really hard, and conflict resolution is also very hard in such close quarters. But then I got pulled back in from a chief steward messaged me, and she said, you know, I saw your CV on YachtSpot and I know you're not looking, but we'd like to like at least try you out. And she said, please come work for us for a month. And if you don't like it, we'll send you home. And I said, okay, I'll give you a month. And that ended up being my continuous career, and I ended up liking it a lot more. But for me, the ending wasn't dramatic in a way that I hated yachting. I actually really grew to love it. But what happened is I had a health scare, or not even a scare. I had a lot of health issues that kind of forced me out of yachting, not by choice. The universe was saying, you know, we're going to take you out. So what happened was I got diagnosed with this rare condition. It's called multiple hereditary excitosis, which basically means it is benign bone tumors that grow all over my body. And what had happened was when I was a chief stewardess, obviously on my feet a lot and running around and also biking and doing all sorts of stuff, these bone tumors, they grew, and they, a lot of the times they grow into like spikes, and they grew into my, almost like my kneecap area, and they were getting caught. So basically they were causing my legs to, I couldn't bend my knees. The bones were caught so bad under my knees, I just couldn't bend them, which means I couldn't walk. So when I wasn't able to walk, sometimes it would happen. And then if I was off my feet for a couple weeks, they would release, and then I'd be able to bend my knees again, be able to walk. And I was seeing a doctor in Fort Lauderdale, and they're saying, this is what you have. And if it happens again, we're going to have to remove them because you can't live your life like this. Like, you can't.
So did you know that you had like this condition, or did you find out when you were on board?
So my mother has this condition as well. And I kind of knew I like had it, but I don't think I understood how debilitating it could be, because I hadn't felt those types of problems before. So I had it. And again, like, I'm doing, you know, 100-kilometer bike tours all the time. I'm super active. I'm doing like Pilates and running, and so you're running around the yacht, you have to be active. And I never had it affect me until it did. And it was really both terrible and scary and all sorts of different like mixed emotions from it. But basically it continued to happen. And so when I was in Fort Lauderdale on a yacht there, the doctor ended up saying, we got to take them out. And that's how I got forced out of yachting.
Did the boat pay for that, or was that not something that...
Yes and no. So that boat ended up letting me go. I was going to say firing me, but letting me go. You can't have a chief stewardess that can't walk. That makes sense. And I was insured under GeoBlue during that time. And we worked out an agreement where they would take care of that insurance payment for a year, which was good. It was a good agreement for me. But with that being said, insurance doesn't cover everything. So I still ended up paying out of pocket for a ton of medical bills. It ended up being maybe like $60,000 at the end of it. And I, you know, if you add it up, you have your medical bills on top of, so your insurance might cover some of your surgery, but it also doesn't cover all of your surgery. So I had to pay for like the surgeries, and it ended up, instead of being one knee, it ended up being two knees. So I had to do two separate surgeries while I was not walking. And then on top of that, you pay for PT, you pay for all your cabs everywhere, you, or your Ubers everywhere, you pay for your food costs, so to live, to rent a place. And so it ended up being a lot of money. But I was also in Florida, and I was also able to get it done fairly quickly.
It's interesting, you know, like obviously I've spoken to lots of women now, and, you know, there are individuals where, you know, rather than them choosing to leave, life is kind of dealing them a card where you've got to go. You know, it's not going to be on the cards for you to even leave when you're ready, kind of thing, that life kind of cuts you out of that. I mean, so obviously you had these operations. Did you have anywhere to live? Like, had you had time to set up a base? Did you know where you were going to go? Like, because obviously this is also the thing with the job, you know? Like, you could be dealt this card, and there was a long time where I could, you know, basically all I could do is, if I had to leave, I'd have to go back to my mom and dad's. That's it. Like, there was nowhere else for me to go.
Yeah.
I hadn't bought a house yet, or even worked out where I wanted to live.
So it was during time. So no, I did barely had any time to figure out what I was going to do. And what happened is it happened during COVID. So there was additional challenges on top of that. So for one, even if I want to go back to Canada to get it done, Canada had shut down all surgery stuff during COVID. They were so backlogged that if I wanted to be seen by a doctor there, I would have been waiting a couple years. I can't wait a couple years to be able to walk properly again. So going back to Canada wasn't a real option. Also, going back to Canada, they really shut the borders, even for their citizens, and they were making people quarantine in hotels, and it was a big thing. So I said, okay, I guess I'm going to do it here. But because of quarantine, my family wasn't also able to come to Florida. So I really kind of didn't have anybody helping me in Florida. And the way that the doctors work there, it's so crazy. The guy was like, well, we're obviously going to have to operate on you. And I said, you know, thinking like, well, when do you think this will be? And I'm thinking, oh, he'll say in, you know, 30 days from now, I'll get to mentally prepare myself. And he goes, are you available tomorrow? And we mean, am I available tomorrow? Like, who's available just on the whim to get sliced open and put under and operated on? I said, no, I'm not available tomorrow. I need a mental check. And he said, okay, well, how about next Tuesday? And I said, okay, next Tuesday. So basically I spent the week offboarding, setting up a Airbnb, pay that, moving off the boat, having friends, making sure I had somebody around. So I had a couple friends in the area that were going to help me. And then I just did it. So I didn't really have any time to think about it, which I could argue was probably better, because then I wouldn't have had enough time to be really scared about the operation and thinking about this is going to be terrible. I just kind of had no time to think about it. I said, this is what I got to do. Survival mode. Let's do it. Let's get it done.
How was the recovery?
Oh my God. Awful. I really didn't. The recovery was so bad that I actually felt for a bit that I was never going to recover. And that kind of sounds a bit dramatic, but basically what the doctor said, so I had two different doctors. I had the first doctor who did one knee, and then I ended up getting a different doctor for a different knee. But the first doctor said to me, it's a minor surgery. You'll be up and walking in a few days. It's going to be fine. It's going to be super easy. You'll be riding your bike again in a week.
Right.
And I said, okay, minor surgery. I can do this, up and at it. In a week, I can, that's no problem, minor surgery. And so I went in with that mentality that this is going to be easy. And so because I thought it was going to be so easy, I didn't actually prepare for a horrible recovery because I was told by a professional that was going to be easy. It ended up being one of the most painful, worst experiences that I've ever had. It was not easy. I was not walking for almost 8 weeks. I kept going to PT, and I kept thinking, like, am I ever going to get better? This guy said it was a minor surgery. What am I doing wrong? I didn't have any food prepared. And I know this, again, it was going to be an easy recovery. I should have meal planned or meal prepped for 30 days. So even just getting food was hard because I physically couldn't get out of bed. Going to the bathroom was really hard. I had to get Ubers to like carry me into the Uber and carry me out of the Uber. And it was a really, really, really challenging recovery.
Where you were staying, you were on your own.
I was completely on my own.
Oh my God.
He told me, oh, it's going to be such an easy recovery. And because it was not, what had happened is that sometimes your muscles, again, I'm not a doctor, but how I'm going to describe it is your muscles kind of just go to sleep. They just die and they don't work. And sometimes they do, but mine decided to just not work. So I was in PT for almost 6 weeks with them trying to shock my muscles back alive. And I would sob and sob and sob. And the poor PT guy, he was so amazing. He'd be like laughing at me while I was crying, me making jokes. But it was a really, really painful experience. And then I found out I had to get the other one done. And I thought, I don't know how I'm ever going to get through this. But the second one, because I was prepared now, so I got through the first one and I'm like, okay, now I know that it's not easy. I'm going to come at this with a different perspective and I'm going to really prepare. So I had all like my ice packs ready. I had 3 meals a day prepped for 30 days. I had, you know, like water jugs at the side of the table, like just little things that you wouldn't think about. And I went into the second surgery thinking, okay, it's going to be another, you know, few months before I can walk properly again. And that surgery, whether it was a different doctor or if I had just prepared myself better, it ended up not being as bad as the first leg.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Did you just, I can't believe you were on your own. I bet your family would go mental, weren't they?
They were really freaked out about it, but I tried not to tell them the extent of how alone I was because I didn't want anyone to really panic. I'm really glad that I was like, at least I always try to laugh through challenging experiences. So like, for example, like even having Ubers, I'd make a joke and be like, well, you know, lucky for you, like I'm tiny and you're going to help me carry me out of this Uber. And most people would just laugh and they'd be like, there's this like helpless tiny girl. Of course I'm going to help her. So I just like make friends and you'd be really surprised about how many people will come to help you when you're in a situation like that. Like so many people were helpful that I didn't know. They were always trying to help me wherever I went.
Was it a kind of a determination to get through it on your own? Or was it just like survival mode? Like, I have no option. I am on my own. It's best if I don't tell my family the full story because I can't cope with them freaking out. And like, what was your head doing?
I was very, so I went through different emotional stages. So I went the, I will never come back from this. There's something seriously wrong. I'm devastated and really freaked out. To just pure survival mode. Like you just have to get this done. You got to get through it. And once I was in that mindset, I was able to just get through it. Like I was working out every day at home. I'm a chief stewardess. I've got system steps. Like I'm like, okay, on this time I'm going to do these exercises and this time we're going to do this. And this is my checklist for the day. And it ended up, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do.
So at what point did you kind of accept the fact that you were never going back on board ever again? Like, was that the first surgery or did you think that you could go back? Like, what was... Or did you go back?
So I did go back.
Oh my gosh.
I was really determined. So one of the things, so I was 100% going back. When I was going into surgery, I was like, okay, I have an easy surgery. I'm going to be backing up and at it in a couple months. It's going to be fine. I'll be on a boat in no time. No big deal. And after I realized it's not an easy surgery and it's actually going to be a really long recovery and it would probably take me about a year, I started taking online courses and I needed something. One, I needed something to do, but two, I wanted to, there's something that I was building on the boat right before I left for all my surgeries. And it was not something that would be able to help other stewardesses, but kind of systems for myself. I was on a really challenging boat that was both kosher and the owners and their family was, it was very, very challenging to say the least. And I was trying to build systems in order to solve problems for this specific family. And a lot of it had to do with the preference management and how to better manage like what their expectations were on the boat, because they were so difficult that they were going through chefs a lot. And I felt really bad. I kept saying, well, I hate having to let, there was like, I think we went through the one season, almost 10 chefs because they couldn't reach this person's standard. And the standard actually wasn't too complicated, but it was so consistent that they wanted like a specific meal every single day. And it had to look a certain way every single day. And there wasn't any room for creativity and chef flair, and chefs just couldn't do it. So verbally me saying like, hey, this is how they like it, they'd be like, okay. And I'd be like, no, but this is really how they like it. And
I should imagine that's like the worst thing a chef ever wants to hear. Well, apart from, this is the list of dietary requirements, take out all of the fun stuff and serve this.
I would say eventually, like, I'd be like, okay, so here's the deal. With the crew, be as fun and creative as possible. But for these people in particular, like, they want, he in particular, the owner wanted his mother's recipes cooked for all meals. And it had to be the exact recipe. And I would say, like, hey, this is how it just needs to be. And if you can't do that, this might not be the job for you. And that's totally okay. But this is like their expectations. And I ended up creating this program for us where basically it was pictures of all these meals and the recipes for all these meals and their preferences and whatnot. And so when I was, and I felt that was, I felt like I was really, really helping the chefs. I stopped having to let chefs go. We started to retain crew. And I was like, okay, maybe this is like a good system. But the way that I built it wasn't pretty. It was just good enough for me and the chefs to understand visually. And so when I was healing from my surgeries and I realized, okay, it's going to take me a really long time. I need something to do. I was taking courses online from VED that would be able to teach me how to build software tools in order to create that for myself. And I didn't think that it was going to be a thing for my company. It is now. But eventually I created, I guess you'll call it like MVP 1, 7-star. And when I created that, I went back on boats for a bit and I was testing it out. And I realized that it was a real problem for a bunch of different other boats and for my other friends that were stewardesses. And I thought maybe this can be a real product that can help a lot of people in our industry.
How did deciding to study help? Because you're, you know, do you think that helped you in a morale sense of the word? Like, you're not constantly thinking about your recovery. You're kind of focused on something else rather. Because you could probably, if you weren't focused on something else, you could probably get caught up in being a bit miserable because it's all a bit shit. Sorry, I should say that on the podcast.
No. It's all
good. It all just sounds like you could. Did you take comfort in just focusing on something else?
Yeah. So I learned early on in my recovery that sitting with your thoughts for long periods of time and not being able to work through them, because like I said, I work through all my problems in a fitness type of way. I go cycling and I think about the problems that I have now, and or I go for a long walk. But when you can't do those things, sitting with your thoughts for that long, I don't think is healthy for anybody. And so having something else to focus on really changed the way that my recovery ended up being, which that's probably why I enjoyed the school so much and learning new things. And I got really, really into it. And I ended up feeling almost grateful that I had time for the first time in a long time to just, I was like forced to sit there and do those types of things. It's not like when I'm on vacation for 30 days and I'm wherever I am, I'm traveling somewhere and having a good time. Like I was really forced to do something that you had to sit down and do. And it ended up being really great. And I ended up finding things about myself that I didn't know that I liked. Like there's no reason why I would, for me, like building software tools. Like I would have never discovered that, or building websites or anything to do with technology, understanding technology even to begin with. Like I owned my first computer pretty much ever, like a real computer that wasn't just for making CVs and resumes, like a real computer that worked well and ran fast, until I was like 27 years old. And when I first started getting real money and I was like, oh, I can spend a few thousand dollars on a Mac computer. And when I bought that computer, I didn't even use it really for anything but Netflix for a year, or until I was a Chief Stew. And so having that time, I mean, even though at the beginning I was like, I'll never recover, this is going to be the end of me, it ended up being almost fun.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. But that kind of, I think, is one of the, you know, if you think about stews by nature, we're problem solvers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We are problem solvers. Like we're trying to generally solve the problems of the guests first. Then we'll be trying to solve the problems of the crew next. And then we might help management out a little bit as well. But to take that mindset and then apply it like solely to yourself, you know, these are just problems. I'm going to solve this problem and I'm going to change my perspective. It's a problem to be solved. It's doable, you know, and you didn't get in your own way about it. I mean, software, like I literally repel technology. So like you've got my ultimate respect. I don't even know I suppose I could probably get my head around it, but like, I don't know. I think even the computer would be tell me to give up and go away.
Honestly, when I first started it, I was terrible. But again, I wasn't in the mindset of like, oh, I can fail at this. Like I didn't have anything attached to it. I was like, this is interesting. It's fun. So what if I'm terrible? It doesn't really matter. It's just something to do and like keep my mind off of other things that I don't feel like thinking about at the moment. And you know, there's a lot of power in being able to be terrible or letting yourself be terrible at things for a significant amount of time. I mean, I was probably terrible about software and different tools and how to develop different products, I would say for a year. And in fact, I'm still like learning different things every day. And I'm like, oh my God, we can do this, or I can do this, and this might help in a different way. And you're just constantly learning. But if I wasn't able to be terrible for that year, I would never have had the opportunity to get good. And so, yeah, if you want to learn software, be okay with being terrible at it for a bit and being confusing and learning technical terms. I'd be in classes and I couldn't keep up. I was like, what are these people saying? It felt like it was a different language. I was like, okay, but now I was at a conference for Airtable. It was like a build-a-thon, which is a software tool that I like to use. And it was interesting. It was people there that had like their whole world, their whole lives, they've been in their adult lives have been in the tech industry. And I really haven't, but I'm able to, when they're talking now, I go, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. I understand exactly what you're saying and exactly how to build that. So it just takes time.
Just takes time and persistence. Persistence. Yeah. You know, don't be afraid to feel stupid. I'm looking forward to like getting past that point, to be honest. A lot of stuff I'm trying to do. But apparently it's never ending. Never ending.
It will never be ending.
You got this idea, you're teaching yourself some software. Was there, when you were like, oh, actually, you know, maybe I could sell this and somebody else might want it. And then when did it like, you're like, oh, this might be my next journey.
Yeah. So as soon as my knees were like healed up, ready to go, I was walking again. I got on one of my like dream programs, and I wasn't even thinking like testing the tool at all. I was just thinking, oh, I'm on a dream program. I'm kind of based out in New York where I want to be. And I've always wanted to work for this boat. It's like a boat with a chase boat. And I was the chief stew and purser there. And the owner of that yacht, their preferences were so insane. And they always wanted me as like the purser chief stew on one yacht to talk about preferences, or to, if like a preference changed on our yacht, I would need to contact the other chief stew on the different yacht. And then I would need to contact the people in the estates and be like, this person, these are the new preferences. Everyone needs to know them. There's been some big changes made. And some of like the gear started turning, and I was going, okay, so this is like a problem on every single boat that I'm on. And here's a different use case for it that was actually different than how I was using it on the boat that I was on before the new stuff. And so I thought, started thinking, okay, why don't I start incorporating this onto this boat? And when I was doing that, I was more back into like the yachting world, and I was talking to my yachting friends again. And I started talking to the chief stewardesses, and I was like, hey, this is what I'm doing. This has always been a challenge for me. It continues to be a challenge for me. This is what I built. What do you think about that? And there was really, everybody kept saying, oh my God, it's a challenge for me too. I'm so tired about preferences. Whether it's a charter yacht or a private yacht, preferences are always so hard to manage. And there's not like any one tool that helps us do it. It's a kind of, you know, some one chief stew does it in Excel sheets, and another chief stew does it in Word documents, and some chief stew, they write it down, and it's on post-it notes, or it's in emails, or it's in a WhatsApp text chain. And I just felt like it doesn't need to be as complicated as what we have right now, and there should be a better way. And so I started showing people, and they were like, yeah, this is a really interesting product. I'd love to use it. And so then I started putting it on, or giving it to for free. I was like, here's 7-star, use it and tell me what you think. And it started really helping a lot of my friends. And once it started helping people, and people are giving me good feedback, and they're saying, hey, I love this, or I actually don't like this, can we incorporate this? I'd say no problem. And I would change things and adapt it as people continue to use it. And that's how it ended up being a real product in our industry.
Ooh, so like, so so it's out there, you're selling it, you know.
I am no shit making money off of it. I never really thought that I was going to. I thought, you know, passion project for me to make my job easier. And yeah, I'm just like really grateful that it's helping a lot of people, and people are very almost like open armed for it. And I can talk to anybody about it. If I'm at any show, or they're like, yeah, like we love preferences. Or like even at the boat shows, I feel like every time I'm going to a yacht, and I'm never trying to sell the product, I'm actually really trying to learn and figure out different ways that other people are using it or using preferences on their boat, and how I can either A, learn what they're doing and incorporate it into 7-star and maybe make it better, or two, like, I can say like, hey, what do you think about this? Give us some feedback. And if you're like, if you've ever gone to a boat show and you go up to yachts, a lot of the times, like even me as a chief stew, when someone's coming to me on a boat show, I'm like, oh, like you're selling me this like fragrance, like I don't care about it. But people, when I go up to them, they're like, oh my God, yeah, like let me talk to you about it, because it is a real problem. So there's like a lot of good feedback for it. People are really open to it. And yeah.
I think it's incredible. Out of the darkness to create something so useful is quite amazing and inspirational. You know, it quite could have quite easily gone completely the other way. You know, it really is a credit to you and what you've, you know, it is, you know, it's an incredible story. You could have quite easily like gone back, you know, back to your parents, you know, wallowed, never had anything to do with the industry ever again, which is a lot of this commonality with a few individuals. They're like, I will never work in the industry again. To turn it into a positive, an incredible positive, is massive credit to you, you know.
Thanks.
I really appreciate you sharing your story with us. I really do. It's quite inspiring. I feel like I should perhaps try harder to learn software now. So
it doesn't have to be software. It can be anything. I just think always like continuous like learning anything is interesting. And yeah, you really never know if you're just trying different things where you end up. Like I said, there's no reason why I should be a founder of a company, of a software company. That's pretty insane. But I was just trying new stuff. I was like throwing like things at the wall, and I'm like, I wonder what's gonna stick. And it really did. And I'm passionate about it. And
really did. And you will be with me in Monaco in a few weeks' time, and we shall be going around and harassing all the ladies on boats in the show.
I'm very excited.
So basically my approach is to talking to these ladies on the back of a boat. I know where all the parties are. So, you know, as far as interior goes, you're not going to touch anything. So we've got some really good ideas and really good connections. You know, how can we make your life easier? And I think what you've provided makes life a lot easier, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all in it to get tips, and anything that helps us get a tip is a winner from my perspective. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Do you want a tip to this season?
Yeah.
Like you've got seven seas, then, you know, might be able to get that trip to Thailand paid for, no worries. In closing, so like if you've got, so obviously we're trying to inspire ladies, what's three pieces of advice you'd give to a woman on board right now? She's like, I'm gonna get off soon, like it's not feeling, throwing around ideas in her head, you know, what she might do next. What's your three bits of advice that you would give her right now as she's listening to this incredible podcast?
So it is an incredible podcast. I love it. So three things. One, I would get a LinkedIn right now. I get off this podcast afterwards and get a LinkedIn. And I'll tell you why. It is going to be the number one tool that you use in your professional life when you leave, whether you're getting into a career that has nothing to do with yachting, or you're going to continue your career in yachting to a sector that's more shore-based. So much of my inbound clients and customers is through LinkedIn. And my biggest regret when I left yachting is I just didn't have that professional presence online. I had the Instagram and the Facebook, and that's great. But LinkedIn has been really, really, really helpful for me. And even seeing my friends that are not in my industry at all, like in New York City, everybody uses LinkedIn. So I would get one now. I would start posting all the stuff that you're doing on the boats, your events, your dinners, your whatever, your steps of service, everything. And so then when you're off boat, you'll have like a good foundation, and you won't be like, oh my God, I'm not professionally present in the online world. So I would start there. I would also take courses on your time off, and they don't have to be expensive courses. There's like online websites that I like called Udemy. And I think the courses are $10 per course if you get a discount when you first sign up. And you get yourself anything that would be valuable for you in your off-board life. So something as small as and fun is how to create a website. It's not actually that hard once you learn how to do it, and it's kind of fun. So I learned stuff like that. I learned about software integrations, like what is a CRM? How do you market to people? How do you build a mailing list? Anything that's going to help you when you're off the boat. I would also save all your money. That's a really big one. And I hope that's like one that everybody recommends. If I didn't, I really saved most of money when I was in yachting. And had I not, when that health thing happened to me, I would have been in a really different, scary spot. Like I had a huge foundation for, okay, this is going to suck ass and I'm going to eat dirt for a long time, but I'm at least financially safe and I can afford to do all this stuff. Also, even within my company, like my company has been completely bootstrapped by the money that I've made in yachting. So I would save all my money. And then I think like we were saying before, don't be afraid to feel stupid and suck at things for a while, because you can't get good at something unless you suck at it at first. And sometimes you suck at it for a year, but then you're going to have this like aha moment where everything clicks and you go, okay, I understand now. And that will take you to the next level of your life. So those are my tips.
They're good. The LinkedIn is definitely a good advice, you know, like I think your story is just, you know, it really does show what's possible, you know, and tapping into the things that make you a good crew member can also really, you know, be your strength with whatever life throws at you afterwards. I really appreciate that. We always finish on a crazy story. Do you have a crazy story from your time on board that you don't mind, like the NDEA's expired or something?
I'm like, what do you want? Do you want like rapey crew? Do you want rape captains? Do you want prostitutes? Do you want okay, so I have a story that I can tell because it doesn't include any owners and any guests, but this actually includes crew, which I'll still not tell who these people are. But we were on one of my crossings we were going to France from the Bahamas, and we experienced really bad weather. So we duck out and we hid in the Azores for a little bit. And have you ever been to the Azores?
No.
The Azores are magical. They're really, really pretty. I don't feel like a lot of people get to go there, so it's really interesting. I'm like, perfect, bad weather. We're going to go to the Azores. When else would I ever go to the Azores? This sounds great. Let's go. So we get there, and it's our first night there, and we've been on a bit of a long crossing. Again, bad weather. Everyone's really sick. We want to get off the boat, and we want to go out. We want to party. So we go out, we have a dinner at this one place kind of near the boat, and we're talking to the person who works there, and we're like, where do people go to go dancing and go out and to have fun, and we want to go out. And the guy who, I don't know, I can't remember if he was like the owner of the restaurant or a staff member or whatever, he's like, I'll take you guys to a bar. And I say, okay, perfect. So we all like, pretty much the whole crew, except for whoever was staying on watch, go out. And we're with this person, and they take us to this bar. And we're under the idea that we get to this bar and they give us like tickets where they punch your drinks. So every time you drink, instead of paying, you give them the ticket and they punch it. So we're under the impression, though, that it's like ladies' drink for free. And that you get like, because you have like a limit on the drinks on the tickets, like this is how many drinks you get. And I think it was like three. And I'm like, great. Well, we've hit our three drinks. We're going to go. And we want to get back to the boat. We have things to do in the morning. and we're leaving, and we all kind of leave in like at the same time, but we leave in different groups. So maybe one person's like 100 feet away from us, like a one group of people, and 50 feet, and then and me, and I'm with the last to leave with another girl, and we're leaving, and somebody comes out and they don't speak English, and they're like trying to explain to us that like we owe money. And I was saying, oh, like, I thought, like, you know, we drank for free, no problem. Like, we'll come back and we'll pay. And so we go back and we pay. And they're, like, trying to, like, get us to pay for everybody else. But I don't have that type of cash on me. I don't have cards on me either. And the guy grabs me and the other girl by the throat. And they, like, slam us into, like, these walls over and over again. And me and this other person, we like look at each other. We're like, hey, this is really scary. And we, obviously, what do? You fucking run, pardon my language. So we book it. And remember, our crew is actually not too far away from us. And so we were able to just like book it to them. By the time we catch up to them, we're by the water and we can see the yacht. And we're with everybody. And I'm saying to the guys that were there, and I'm saying, this is what happened. They're saying we owe money. They grabbed us by the throat. I paid some of the things. I didn't have that much cash on me. I'm terrified. I've never been like grabbed in entire life like that. And the other girl, she's crying. And they're going, oh my God, like, are you okay? And out of nowhere, this guy who was from the bar pulls, speeds up in his car and jumps out with a knife.
And oh my God.
Crying. And I'm so confused of what's going on. And also there had been like a little bit of drinking, obviously. And I'm like, oh my God, this guy jumps out. And the guys that were on the boat, they were like big South African men. Like they were like 6 foot, like three, could barely fit in a crew cabin. Like they were big guys. And this guy jumps out and he's trying to like stab, like he's going like this to everybody and trying to stab everyone. We're all like, what was going on? And so of course, like the guys like, hey, dude. And eventually the officers are like, everybody just like run back to the yacht. So I've never seen anybody run so fast in my entire life. Like everybody booked it and we're jumping over fences, like jumping onto the yacht. The guy goes in his truck and he pulls a gun and tries to shoot us. And we jump like onto the boat, everyone in, we're like putting the pass rail up. We're like into like the main salon, locking all the doors, turning all the lights off and calling like the police or whoever and watching the guy like walk back and forth and patrolling the yacht. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen in my life. And when anyone says like, oh, like I love the Azores, like it's so cool, it's so beautiful, I always think of that story. And I always think I would never go back to the Azores. That was the worst experience I've ever had, like any travel experience. So I hope, yeah. I have a lot more different stories, but I feel like they are more so involved.
That's insane. We've never had a gun story before, so that's new. Thank you very much for that.
So happy to be the first.
So the moral of the story, obviously, crew members, if you're going to a bar, really understand who's paying for drinks. Because it could end really badly.
We were so confused. We really thought it was ladies drink for free, but we wouldn't have left after the third drink. We're like, oh, perfect. Like, it's, you know, we punched all of our dogs. Like, we're done. Let's go back and go drink somewhere else or whatever we were doing. And, oh, it was so bad.
The moral is, ladies, there's never no such thing as a free drink. There's always a catch. Always a catch. Thank you for telling that story. And thank you for coming on the podcast. And I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk about something. I'd love to like do an update and see how things are going. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. This was so fun. My first podcast.
First of many, I'm sure. To the listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Obviously, another incredibly inspirational woman for you. If you have enjoyed this podcast, there are many more recorded and we are continuing to do this. And also share with friends. We have a lot of information coming out of these stories from these incredible women. If you want to hear more of the advice, you can go into our app, Yacht Pearls of Wisdom. All of our libraries are available on there. But yeah, we'll see you again next time.